Welcome to the Dad's Podcast, discussions about dad stuff. I am Dan Pelham, founder of the Solo Dad Movement and host of the Dad's Podcast. Feel free to reach out to me and share your story at thesolodadmovement.com, email thesolodadmovement@outlook.com, Facebook, The Solo Dad Movement, Instagram, the_solo_dad_movement, Twitter, @thesolodadmove1. In this podcast, I will be interviewing dads and men from all walks of life in hopes that maybe someone will hear their story and understand that they are not alone. I want to shift fatherhood from boys don't cry, tough it out, and the disciplinarian to a place of love, empathy, and understanding from men who are willing to share their stories and feelings with others. I really hope you enjoy this journey into what it means to be a dad. All right, so today I want to just discuss perception versus reality when it comes to the podcast and, you know, trying to keep the positive going. 6 weeks ago, I came up with this idea to make this podcast and hopefully, you know, become a coach and helping others to figure out how to be a better parent and, you know, get through being the struggles that are a dad, and hopefully getting people to share the struggles and the positives and all the aspects of what it means to be a dad. I thought it was going to be easy. I thought people would just want to talk to me, like it would be something that people would want to share. And I've had fairly good success. I mean, I've had several people agree to sit down and talk to me, and actually a few people sit down and talk to me. And last week I had, you know, the realization of life, and people get busy and cancel the simple things like, you know, it was a half hour, 30 minute, 45 hour, whatever the appointment would have been. And, you know, it was agreed upon, and then, we're going to have to reschedule, or I'm going to have to change, or they just didn't get back to me. And I guess that's, you know, that's life. That's how things go. And last week was hard in a lot of ways. I mean, I spent, gee whiz, a long time dealing with depression and my kid's mother. Like you've known, and if you listen to this podcast, was an alcoholic and was sick with liver cirrhosis for years. And I lived in a very dark place trying to protect my children and deal with her addictions and how that affected my children and the disappointment and just a lot of things went on. And I just lived in a depressive state, like a very dark place. In 2018, I lost a lot of people that were important to me. And out of that, like, I learned, one, a lot about who I am. And two, like, I depended a lot, or I lived my life a lot to make sure my dad was maybe going to be happy with the decisions I made, or maybe say I love you, or maybe support me, or say he was proud, or whatever the case might have been. And it wasn't a conscious everyday decision, but with his passing, I very much realized that it was something that I did have to, you know, I take as a blessing at this point, because now there isn't anyone who I live to please. And when you take that weight off your shoulders and you don't live for somebody else's approval or somebody else's decisions, like, it's incredible, to be honest with you. Like, it's something where I've never been there. I've never experienced it. And I've only recently discovered it, I'd say, in the past 3 or 4 months, as to, yes, that's something, like, you know, like, that weight is lifted off my shoulders. Like, what I'm doing here is a podcast. You're either going to support me or you're not. And that's fine. Like, I'm not asking for anyone who doesn't want to listen to this, or anyone who doesn't want to support me, to pretend, like, please. You know, I mean, you have to have the balance of people that love and support you and people that are not going to, or else what gratification is there out of the people that do love and support you? So I think that's an important balance. And I think last week, I mean, my kids started school and my daughter's boyfriend went to the Navy and some of her friends went to college, and there was just a lot of things that added to the stresses of life. And I can blame it on being busy, and I can say a thousand things of why it was the way it was. And to be real with you, I didn't take care of myself last week. I didn't start my day with my time. I didn't start with the 15 or 20 minutes of quiet time in the morning and focusing and grounding myself and being thankful for the things that are in my life and that I'm appreciative for, and just starting my day with an outlook of how do I want today to progress to be a productive thing. Like, I just got up and went, and you know, I try and daily stop myself several times a day and just reground myself and try and focus. And last week, like, I went through the motions, but I didn't actually follow through on the actions. Like, yeah, I took time out. You know, I sit for 3 minutes in quiet with everything off, and I would breathe and I would focus, try and clear my thoughts. And before I was done, I would just stop and move on with my day. Like, I was busy, and you know, there was a lot of things that, like I said, that went on that affected that. And I realized the month prior to that, like, I had been in a much better place because I had stopped and taken care of myself. And when I say stopped and taking care of myself, like, I spent 5 to 15 minutes a day, or a time, 2 or 3 times a day. And I just stop and I focus on my breathing and I try and clear every thought out of my head and just breathe. Like, just breathe. That's all that mattered. Like, just focus on the breath going in and coming out and clearing all your thoughts. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but when you do it and you pay attention to it and you are focused on that, and it's a process you go through several times a day, like, it changes a lot of things. It does let you figure out what's important and what thoughts need to be in your head and what thoughts are just toxic. And without it, last week, like, without doing that practice and without completing the procedure, like, it was very much the negative built up and became more. Like, you know, I mean, the best way to describe it is kind of like an hourglass. You tip an hourglass over and the sand falls, and that sand builds up and builds up and builds up and builds up. And if you don't take a second and stop and reset that hourglass, that sand continues to build. And that weight continues to build, and that stress continues to build. And pretty soon you're focusing on the sand falling and the weight of that sand on yourself, and you're not even focusing on the fact that you have complete control to stop it and turn the hourglass over and start again. Like, you just focus on the negative and you focus on the bad things. And when that happens, those bad things multiply quickly. And it's not even that they multiply quickly, it's that you're focusing on those. And you're not taking time to say, okay, you know, where am I and what can I do to better this? And how can I change my perspective? And what can I learn from this? And I spent a week there. And when you spend a decade, close to a decade, in a dark, depressed place, and you don't feel like there's a lot of support and help, and being a dad and a guy, like, you don't ask for it. You know, I sought it out in certain places, you know, and like I've said before, I have a great therapist who's helped me through a lot. But over the last 6 months, I have built a much better network of positivity in my life. Like, not just my therapist, but friends and acquaintances and, you know, people that are going to support me and turn me toward the positive and, you know, just leadership in my life that's heading in the right direction, and not people that are, I don't want to say negative, but just people that are not going to support you. Like, people that are there and they can be your friends, but they're not raising you up. They're not building you up. They're just accepting you for who you are. And sometimes, like, accepting you for who you are when you're in a bad place isn't always the best thing. Like, you need the people around you that are going to build you up and make you feel better and be positive influences in your life. And I didn't have that for a long time, and it's something I'm working on very strictly now. And like I said, I mean, last week I fell off. And when you fall off, last week I felt back in that depression. I felt like I was back in that state of mind where things just sucked and I was stuck. And, you know, I struggled through it. And I've talked to several people over the weekend and, you know, Monday and Tuesday. And I worked through that, you know what, like, it's not the same. It's an entirely different situation, and it's a series of unfortunate events that are going to happen in everybody's life, and it's how I didn't take care of myself and how I didn't deal with those things, and I let them build up to feel like it was overwhelming. And it's very easy to do that and to slip back into the depressive state that you were in, and you feel that was same way, but it's not. And that's what I think I want people to realize is, you know, like, take 10 seconds and turn the hourglass over. Like, you can let that sand build back up, but if you tip it over and you start over, like, it's not an overwhelming sensation. It's not drowning. It's not so much weight on your shoulders that you don't know how to start over. You just have to stop. Take some deep breaths. Clear your mind of what is and what isn't important. And focus on the blessings and the gifts and the positivity that's in your life. Like, because even in the deepest state of depression, like, I know I can look at my kids and that's something that to me is a positive every single time. Like, I never ever looked at that as a negative, you know. And yes, they're stressful, and yes, they drive me to the point of insanity sometimes. But at the end of the day, like, I know that that's the definition of love in my life, is my children. And I'm more than lucky. I'm blessed to have amazing children. And again, like, they're not perfect. They drive me crazy, but they're mine and I love them. And I don't know that I would be the person I am today without them. Actually, I know that I wouldn't be the person I am today without them, because the person I was without them was an addict. And that's what I did. Like, I was an addict. I self-medicated, or not even self-medicated, like, I did whatever I had to do to not deal with whatever bullshit was going on in my life. And, you know, at the time it felt like a lot, and maybe it wasn't a lot, maybe it was just a lot of shit that I didn't deal with as a younger child and a teenager and in my early 20s that I just smoked away and drank away. And, you know, you sober up and you realize, like, whew, that's a lot. I mean, you know, I've watched my daughter, who turned 17 a month from now, who lost her mom last year, a month after she turned 16, and I watched her spiral, and I made sure she knew I was there, and I made sure she knew I loved her, and I did my best to help her through the process. And, you know, it's hard. It's your kid, and you watch them spiral out of control and know that they're not dealing with the important things in life. But at 16 years old, like, how do you deal with those important things, and how do you get past that? And it was something I watched with all my kids, you know, like, but they dealt with it in different ways. Like, you know, my 10-year-old son never really, he knew his mom, but it was never there was never a motherly bond. Like, she was never there to pick him up and scrape off his boo-boos and make him feel better or snuggle with him on the couch and tell him stories. Like, and maybe when he was younger, that happened a little bit, but it was still always a mix between a drunk Disneyland and a toxic drunk mom. Like, and you never knew what you were going to get or how long it would last or, you know, how long she would be present or if she remembered or any of that. Like, it was just a crazy upbringing. And the older two kids didn't so much have that. Like, their mom was sober and present for a significant part of their younger lives, and they remember that. And, like, I back to my daughter, like I said, like, I watched her spiral out of control, and you know, she escaped into music and, to be honest with you, like, drugs. Like, I know she did drugs. I know she did. And being who I am and the shit I've been through, like, I don't know that I accepted it, but I understood. And I don't know, 6-7 months ago, she met a boy who, you know, pulled her out of it. Like, he was the saving grace to her spiral. Like, he slowed her down enough to make her realize that what she was doing was not only harmful, but was completely ineffective. And at 16 years old, when your daughter says, you know, I did all these things and I realized, I knew what I was doing the entire time and I knew I was avoiding what I had to deal with. And she's like, and I also realized that when I wasn't at a concert or I wasn't fucked up on drugs, that my problems were still there. And I had, you know, at some point, like, I just knew, like, this wasn't the path I needed to go down. Like, doing drugs and going to these concerts wasn't going to change the fact that her mom was gone. And she realized that at 16 years old. At 16, like, dude, at 16 years old, I realized drugs were a good time. And that's what I realized. Like, I didn't even realize I had unseen issues I wasn't dealing with. So, kudos to her for that. Like, she's more than amazing. You know, I look now, like, her boyfriend went to the Navy, and now she's, you know, found someone that she loves, and he's gone. Like, for all shakeable arguments, like, he's gone. He is in basic training for 6 to 8 weeks, and then he has a couple of days off for graduation, and then he's, you know, off to the next thing, and maybe they have some free time to see each other, but he's 1,000 miles away. And I don't know how this is going to work out, but she also, right now, is in a point where she hasn't been. Like, she hasn't been where she is now since her mom passed away. She hasn't been sober and not with someone there to make her feel better. And, you know, it's a struggle we all go through. And we're 2 months away from the anniversary of her mom's death. And all the studies say that the second year's harder than the first. So, guess I strap my boots a little bit tighter and hope the shit doesn't get too deep. My oldest son, AJ, like, honestly, I think out of everyone, sorry, I have some allergies today, so sorry for the sniffles, I apologize. But like I was saying, my older son, AJ, I think in a lot of ways have dealt with this better than almost all of us. Like, he, you know, I don't, he's not so as vocal, and, you know, like, I don't think he drowned himself in drugs, and there's a lot of guilt because he chose to not see his mom in the last couple of years of her life because of how hard it was to do that, and the disappointment, and the fact that she chose her addiction over him. And, you know, as an 8-year-old to a 14-year-old, like, how do you understand that? How do you grasp the concept of alcoholism and that the bottle's more important than anything else in her life? And that's just how it was. And, you know, he dealt with it, he went to therapy, and he's talked about it, and he's gone in his room and cried. And, you know, he's got a good group of friends, and I don't know that they talk about it, but, you know, they're friends, they're there. Like, he knows, I think, if he needs to, he can call, and they'll be there, and they'll listen, and they'll do what they have to get through it. And he's got two wonderful dads that support him. And, you know, again, like, I don't know how he's dealing with it, and I know it's hard, and I know that, you know, starting school again and having to hear all the people ask how you're doing and that kind of stuff, like, you know, it's something that I've tried to tell him. Like, people don't know what to say. People that haven't lost a parent or haven't experienced a loss like this at a young age, like, they don't have any idea what the right thing to say is. And to be honest with you, there is no right thing to say besides, you know what, if you need to talk, I'll listen. Like, that's probably the best thing you can say is, hey, man, like, I'll listen if you need to talk. But don't say that if you're not willing to sit down and listen either. Like, people say, oh, let me know what I can do for you. And you reach out and they're like, yeah, okay, I'll get back to you. Like, that's worse almost than not having someone there, you know. And I think like I said, I think he's done a pretty good job of dealing with it. My youngest, like I said, like it's hard to judge at 10 years old, you know, like what affects him. And I think it's hard for him to know at 10 years old, like what affects him. And I've noticed a change in the music he listens to and some of his actions. And I don't know if it's my perception of the things that are going on and nothing in his world is really changing, or if it's his lack of perception because he's 10 and he doesn't know why he's feeling the way he is, or that he's even feeling that. He's just not as happy. But I've noticed these small things. And, you know, like, I guess getting back to perception versus reality, like, the only way that I think people understand how you feel is if you talk about it. And I think that's one of the driving forces in this podcast and in my purpose of doing what I'm doing, is to get men and boys and really anyone, but the stigma with men and boys is that we're tough and we don't cry and we don't have emotions. And I think it's crap. Like, why bury that stuff and pretend like everything's all right? Because, you know, your hourglass, like, I know, I tell you, you can reset your hourglass every day and you can focus on the good and, you know, get that weight off your shoulders by taking care of yourself. But the bigger picture, your hourglass only has so much sand in it. And when that sand is done, like, that's it. And if you let that sand build up on you, sometimes it leads to places you don't want to be and choices you don't want to make. And, you know, like, I've read several places and several accounts of, you know, every survivor that's jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, every single person that's jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge has been glad that they survived and wishes that they hadn't made that choice to begin with. Like, every single survivor, look at, I mean, read the books, they're out there, read the facts. Like, every person, I think, that has gone through the depression and the bad stuff and come out the other side is grateful that they're still alive. And, you know, like, the weight of depression and the bad stuff, I don't want to build up to the point that it's not worth living anymore. And I think one way to accomplish that is to talk and speak and let those words come out. And I realize, as the society we live in, men don't want to listen to that, but man, I'm here. Like, I will give you any information you want. You can reach out to me in any form you want. Like, my webpage is thesolodadmovement.com. My email is thesolodadmovement@outlook.com. Like, Facebook, Instagram, all those things. Like, The Solo Dad Movement. Look it up. Send me a message. Say, hey, I just need someone to listen. And, you know, I'd rather sit and listen to you for 5 or 6 hours, not knowing who you are, than for have anyone have to listen to your eulogy for a half an hour. Like, that's just crazy town, you know? So, in starting this, like, my mission was clear. I want to change the perception of boys don't cry and tough it out to a place coming from empathy and compassion and love. And I really thought it would be a simple procedure of just asking, and people would say, yeah, dude, absolutely, I'll sit down and talk with you. And as it turns out, it's not so simple. Like, you know, people are like, yeah, absolutely, that sounds awesome, let's do it. And then trying to get that scheduled and getting them to commit to it is not the same, you know. And in the interviews I've done, it's been sort of superficial, and I guess I expected more. But, you know, I think as I go along and as I get more people to sit down and talk to me, like, it'll be easier to figure out how to get past the surface and into the real and into the feelings and, you know, the things men don't really talk about, but I think need said and need heard. And, you know, I want a place where even if you don't feel like you can talk, you can get in your car and you can put your earphones on, or you can plug your phone into your car stereo and you can drive around and you can listen to any number of these podcasts. Or, you know, you can look for, man, I don't know how to do this, or, you know, I'm a stepdad and these aren't even my kids and I don't know how to deal with that. And I want to reach out to all these people and I want them to have a place where they can understand that they're not alone and someone else has been through it and maybe listen to that story and find a way or a difference or, you know, research it up and get a hold of me and share your story so that we can move past this. And, you know, the more stories that are shared, the more people we can help, and the more people we can help, the more stories that are shared. Like, it's a crazy concept and it's a crazy idea, and I hope that God it takes off the way I plan it in my head. You know, and like I said, I'm 6 weeks in from idea. I mean, from the idea of this, I'm 6 weeks in, and last week I felt discouraged, super discouraged. You know, and I know, like, I look at other podcasts and based on the same thing, like, what are dads and what are they doing, and, you know, self-help groups for dads and that kind of stuff. And you see, like, most of these podcasts last 6 months to 2 years. And I've listened to a lot of them, and I think a lot of them had some amazing content. And, you know, I look at mine, and I have two or three listeners that have listened to this thing one or two times, and that's not what I expected. But I also wonder how many of these other people that quit after 6 months or a year or 18 months, like how many of them were two podcasts away or one interview away from going viral and it making a difference, or the right person showing up and having the proper interview, or just a sentence being said that changed everything, you know. And I'm I have every intention of sticking this out for a while, and it's not, I don't know, I don't want to put a time frame on it, because I hope that it's something that continues to build and something that I continue to be excited about. And, you know, like, focus my energy on and help people with. And I don't know. I mean, it's just weird because, like I said, last week was crazy and hard, and I felt like I sunk back into depression. And this week I feel better. Like, and I don't think anything's changed except my, oh, what is the word? Like, my ability or my recognition of not taking time out for myself. And I'm not talking like, oh, geez, you know, I need a day off or I need a vacation. I'm talking about, like I said, 5 to 10 minutes a few times a day to just quietly sit and focus on what is good and what is positive and why is my energy not matching my thoughts, or why is my energy overwhelmed with negativity, and why am I just my thoughts overwhelming me and I can't escape that? Like, why is that happening? And the truth is, like, bad negative shit can happen every day, but it's what you focus on and what you tell yourself and what you think that changes. And, you know, when you think, oh man, that sucked, like, oh man, my kid starts back to school and he seems to be struggling with life, and oh, my older kids are struggling, and oh, this negative thing's coming up, and the anniversary of their mom's death's coming, and you know, let all those negative things build up and overwhelm you. Or you can take a second out of your day to breathe, and you can be happy and grateful that you have a relationship with your kids, that they can come to you and talk to you. Because I know a lot of parents don't. I know, like, and I don't have the best open vocal relationship with my oldest son. Like, he knows I'm here and we talk here and there, you know, but like my daughter, like, I think we feel like we can tell each other a lot. Like, I hope she feels like she can come to me with anything in her life. And I think she does, because she does come to me with a lot of stuff. And some of it I don't want to know for sure. Like, there's just things, you know, you're like, oh, okay, didn't need to know that, but thanks for sharing. And some of it, I'm glad that she tells me and I can help her through it. But at the end of the day, instead of focusing on, oh, how hard is it and what a struggle it is, I need to learn and practice to focus on how blessed I am to have these people in my life and how grateful I am that they trust me and respect me and love me enough to share with me their struggles. you know, and not let that bring me down, but instead let that build me into a better dad and a better person and share that story with you guys. And I hope that, you know, this gets out and people, it makes a difference. And I hope that the people that now that are like, yeah, dude, we can definitely meet up and we can definitely get together. And I'd love to have a conversation with you. And, oh, well, let's get it scheduled. Let's not show up. Like, I hope those people, one, come around to talk to me. And two, like, I hope those people, if they don't come around and talk to me, look back on this in a year and be like, man, I should have been in the beginning of this. I should have been in the start of this. I should have been interview number 7 instead of interview number 73. You know, and I don't care. Like, to me, it mattered last week. It really, some of it actually affected me. Like, I set appointments and I reached out to these people and I expected that they would be there and they would do what was being requested of them. And but I also have to look at the other side of it is life is life and people are busy. And, you know, what am I asking? Like, oh, what does it mean to be a dad? Like, how, as a guy, like, do you really want to dive into that? And, you know, I don't quite understand the question. And maybe that's fair. I don't know. But I hope that they'll listen to this and they'll listen to the first couple and they'll understand, like, it's pretty simple. And, you know, I hope some of them will share that their stories and, you know, their stories of loss and love and understanding and heartbreak and healing and all of the things that encompass being a dad on a daily, weekly, monthly, lifetime basis. You know, I want to talk to dads that have grown kids that can look back on, you know, because sometimes retrospect is the easiest way to understand how well you did. And I want to talk to dads that are just starting. Like, you know, like, I would love to find someone who just found out they were pregnant and will sit down and talk to me about how that feels and what that means. Because you can look back and you can say how it felt and what it meant to you. But the story's different in the moment than it is in retrospect, and it always is, you know? And the story's different in the future. Like, I can tell you where my kids are right now, and I can tell you where I hope my kids are in the future, and I can look back and tell you where we've came from. But as today, that story changes tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it doesn't change on a daily basis. Maybe it's a weekly or a monthly basis, or, you know, I get to watch them grow through their losses and figure out how to be whole, complete, happy human beings, even though they've lost so much in their life. You know, I mean, I had my son ask me once, we went to the doctors, and he was probably 6 or 7. And I remember, like, the doctor kept saying, I was going in for surgery for something, and the doctor kept saying, you know, you don't have to worry, like, your mom and dad will be here for you, and your mom and dad will take care of you, and when you get out of surgery, your mom and dad will be waiting for you. And the doctor left, and I looked at my son, and I asked him, I'm like, dude, does it bother you? He's like, yeah, kind of. And I'm like, do you want me to say anything? He's like, no, it's okay. And, you know, the nurse kind of looked over, questioning, like, what we were talking about. And I said, he doesn't have a mom. Like, he hasn't for a long time. And it's just kind of, you know, and it's not something people think about. It's just a way to talk to people. But, you know, it's one of those things that bothered him. And the nurse left and he looked at me and he said, Dad, have you ever known anyone that didn't have a mom? And I said, no, I don't know that I have. And he's like, then I don't understand why it makes you so sad and why you think it's such a bad thing. Like, maybe it's an okay thing. Maybe it's a good thing. You know, and I Jesus Christ, like, the epiphany of a 7-year-old, like, what do I know? You know, it's not something he missed. Like, it's not something he had. And I can only look at my experience and know at 43 years old, if my mom passed away tomorrow, like, I would be devastated. But I also lived 43 years with a woman who loved me and nurtured me and raised me and made sure I was okay and supported me in all my dreams and aspirations and failures and everything else that I went through in life. Like, I knew one stable thing in my life was my mom, and this kid never had that. So how do you miss that? How do you move past that? You know, how does that affect him? And it's a strange dynamic. But again, like, coming from my kid, like, it was an epiphany, I guess, to say the least. So when we get back to perception versus reality, my perception of this podcast in the beginning was it was going to be easy. Reality is it's not. My perception is people would just want to talk to me and share their stories. And I don't know what that reality is. I guess being that I'm 6 weeks from the idea being concepted in my head to now, and I've got several people that will share and several people more that are lined up to share, that the reality is that people are going to share, and I hope that it continues to grow and continues to be an amazing thing. And if you don't share, you get to listen to more podcasts of me talking about me. So I hope that people reach out, and I hope that the stories are something that people want to listen to and understand, and we can change the next generation. Because if we can change the next generation a little bit, then the generation after that will be even better. In 3 or 4 generations, when I'm no longer here, maybe men will share their feelings and their passion and compassion and empathy and, you know, come from a place of love rather than a place of strength and, I don't know, big hopes, I guess, and I might never know the results of those, but I hope everyone that listens to this reaches out and shares their story again. And you guys have a wonderful night. Hug your kids, tell them you love them.